The San Jose Sharks Audio Network is on 24 hours a day. Whether you're in the office or on the go, make sure that you download the Sharks SAP Center app and hit listen anytime. You can also find us on your computer by going to sjsharks.com/listen. If it's a game broadcast, breaking news, or a player feature, the place to find it is right here on the San Jose Sharks Audio Network. Welcome to the Stanley Cup Playoff Report. Here are Dan Rusinowski and Drew Remenda.
What can you say about the Stanley Cup Final? It is hockey at its best, and we've got four games played, and it is two games apiece. The Edmonton Oilers with an absolutely incredible comeback after being down 3-0. If I'm not mistaken, that's the first time that's happened in the Stanley Cup Final since 1919, when the Montreal Canadiens played the Seattle Metropolitans, the first NHL team from Seattle. And also, if I'm not mistaken, Drew, that was the year that they canceled the final because of the influenza epidemic.
That's amazing. That did ring a bell, without a doubt. When you said 1919, I went, and then it's incredible when you look at that was only two. When you look at that game, you know, comebacks happen in the National Hockey League a lot. Obviously, they happen in San Jose Sharks history a lot with that great comeback against the Vegas Golden Knights. But to only have that since 1919, it was astonishing to me when I heard that stat. Amazing.
Yeah, it really is incredible. And of course, there's so many amazing things that are going on about this game. By the way, if you're Gary Bettman and Bill Daly, you got to be thrilled about the way the hockey is being played, because this is the best advertisement for the sport you can get.
Absolutely. And they're talking expansion again, with Atlanta getting a lot of buzz lately. And that certainly is boding well for the National Hockey League. But you know, we've been seeing it now for the last number of years, even though there's more teams and everybody says the talent pool has diminished. I disagree. I think that the game's explosion has increased the talent pool and the skill level, and you're seeing it in this final.
But what you're also seeing is that all of these new places, in quotes, that have teams, San Jose being one of those, in quotes, new areas, even though it's not exactly new, is that all these kids are starting to pick up the game, and some of the best athletes in all those areas are starting to really love and play hockey. Look at Florida. Look at how amazing the sport has grown in that state alone.
Well, and we were there a couple of seasons ago, and we went to their practice facility. Because the Sharks, that's where they had to go practice, because we had that extra time in Florida. And you remember all those kids and all the teams that were playing? It was a nice facility, and it was absolutely packed with young people, boys, girls, playing the game. It was terrific. And the Sharks were out there, and they had their practice. It was fantastic to see, and it was a really nice facility.
Well, of course, Melissa Fitzgerald, who used to be at Oakland Ice, is the one who's running things over there. So, of course, it's being run right.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a beautiful facility, fantastic stuff. And it's great to see. It really is. And the non-traditional markets, what the teams have been able to do, San Jose was one of the instigators, one of the pioneers of this, was to grow the game at the grassroots level. And when you're seeing, and the one thing I see, Danny, more than anything, as this game has grown and grown and grown in the Bay Area and all the other so-called non-traditional markets, what you're seeing is a real influx of players from these markets, but also throughout the United States. You're seeing the United States produce great player after great player after great player because of their development system, from the USJHL to the USHL to the development leagues, to the under-18s, the development system that the US has got. It's really taken off, and the college players are even better than ever. So the game has grown at the NHL level, but it's also fostering growth at every other level as well.
Fantastic. Well, let's go over game number four. It kind of reminds me a lot of that Sharks game 7 against Vegas, or maybe the San Jose game in Los Angeles, where the Sharks were down by 4 goals and came roaring back, and Devin Setoguchi got the game winner in overtime. It all started out really well for Florida. Matthew Tkachuk, who just is always there when you really need him, came up huge and scored a fantastic goal. And in fact, it put the Panthers in front by the score of 1-0, and it was just the beginning of a great period for FLA.
Faceoff win, Tkachuk, left circle, walks in, shot, and he scores! scores a power play goal. Matthew Tkachuk in the 5-on-3 gives the Panthers a 1-0 lead.
What was the key about all that? First of all, the face-off win, Tkachuk just sending it right to the net, but guess who was in the penalty box? Evander Kane with an ill-advised high-sticking call that he shouldn't have taken.
Yeah, and he didn't get a lot of ice time as that game wore on. But Matthew Tkachuk, a really good play on that. And Ekholm took that penalty as well as made it the 5-on-3. And when you look at the way that that first period started out, you couldn't ask for anything better. That crowd got going, and getting Matthew Tkachuk on the scoreboard, very important for the Florida Panthers, or at least you thought it was.
Well, you thought it was, and certainly the ice time was a factor for a couple of guys on the Edmonton side. We'll get to that in a second, but how about the power play being the factor early? Another one for Matthew Tkachuk, and all of a sudden, it was 2-0.
Barkov out to Jones again. Jones straight on the line to Barkov in the right circle. Now it's Tkachuk in front of Reinhardt. A shot, save, rebound, and they score! It's a power play goal for Matthew Tkachuk, picking up the rebound. 2 here in the opening frame, and the Panthers lead 2-0 with 3:04 to go here in the first.
By the way, how about the crowd in Florida? It's been fantastic, and you know it's right there with Edmonton, which is certainly one of the more intimidating places to play, but the Panthers fans were right on it.
Remember back when they weren't the Panthers, you know, where that their current team that they are now, that you look at we would go there and there'd be sections, absolute sections empty. And now you cannot get a seat. It's fantastic to see. And that's what shows you winning brings people back. Winning brings people to the game. But on that goal, what I like about the Florida Panthers power play, it's pretty simple. They don't waste any time. They get after the puck. They get the puck back to the point. They get shots. They get people to the net. It's a very simple power play setup. Nothing really complicated. Nothing really you got to scheme to figure out. It's very direct, and it was very good there on a rebound opportunity for Tkachuk again.
One thing I'll add, too, is that all of the top players that are so gritty for the Florida Panthers also have tremendous skill. And check out the people who had the points on those two power play goals. Tkachuk from Barkov. Then Tkachuk from Reinhardt and Barkov. I mean, these are elite-level skilled players.
Amazing. And Danny, remember back in the day when Detroit, and everybody talked about the Detroit way. What was the big secret about Detroit? And it was that their best players were their hardest workers. So when you came into that organization, you couldn't take a day off. You couldn't take a minute off on the ice because their best players, Lidstrom, Yzerman, Shanahan, Datsyuk, Zetterberg, all those guys worked their tails off. Same thing here.
Well, that certainly set the tone, and then some of the role players came through. Anton Lundell, who has had a very solid playoff, was on the ice with Verhaeghe and Reinhardt, and Lundell's just a solid player. Came up with a really, really, really important goal for Florida to give them a little bit of a lift late in the first period with less than a minute to go.
Verhaeghe, then Reinhardt, game center, plays it down into the far corner. Stetcher there. He's bumped, played out front, and they score! Hard work on the forecheck leads to a goal for Anton Lundell as he was set up out front by Carter Verhaeghe. What a play, what a finish, and the Panthers take a 3-0 lead. It's Anton Lundell going hard to the net.
Now, Troy Stetcher was on the ice for that goal against, and you know what? He had one shift in the second period and then didn't play for the rest of the game. And so Edmonton ended up using 5 defensemen for the rest of the contest, which is incredible when you think about it.
Yeah, especially when we know what happened after the first period. They actually shortened their bench. Once it got, as the game went on, Chris Knobloch really shortened that bench. He was putting McDavid and Draisaitl out a lot on the ice, as you would when you're down.
Well, we call that the nuclear option, right? You throw those guys out there and you just keep at it. And, you know, Ryan Nugent Hopkins can jump in there. You've got Connor Brown. You've got several other guys that'll step in. And also on defense, they were really stressing out Bouchard and Ekholm in a big way. You wonder how that's going to affect the rest of the series.
Well, Bouchard took a hard hit. I thought Ekholm struggled last night as we're recording this in game 4. I thought he had a tough game. To me, though, when you look at Ekholm, you have to kind of judge it on the fact that he missed so much time that he's still trying to you know, find that rhythm. He's going to have some inconsistencies on some days. I didn't think he was great last night, that like he usually is, but that bar is set pretty high when it comes to that player.
That's for sure. Okay, so 3-0 in favor of the Florida Panthers at the end of the first period of play. And you wonder what was going on in that Edmonton dressing room. Well, Leon Draisaitl, who would later be the hero of the situation, talked a lot about the character of the club when down 3-0.
I think that's once again tells you that our group never quits, right? Like, I think we believe that no matter how bad it is, if we get over that hump of adversity, you know, we're going to keep pushing. We're going to keep coming. We're going to keep coming. And eventually it'll break. And again, you know, we don't want to be in these situations too many times. But when they happen, I think we're great at it.
But that's when you also rely on some of those veteran players that maybe not the stars of the team to step up and say something. And apparently Corey Perry said a lot in that first intermission, and Leon talked about it.
The message is that he's been in these moments. He's not a guy that speaks up or yells at guys all the time. That's not his character. So you know, when a guy like that, with that many games, that much experience, he's won everything there is to win. He knows how to win. When he speaks up, you listen, and it grabs your attention. So, he's a heck of a leader.
In all of my doings with Corey Perry, I've found him to be a rather quiet personality, sitting in the dressing room after practices and so forth, when the media comes in and puts their microphones in these guys' faces, as I've done a few times. But, you know, it reminded me in some ways, sometimes, of people like Joe Pavelski or Patrick Marleau, guys that didn't always say a lot, but when they stood up in the dressing room to say something, boy, everybody listened. And that seemed to be the case with Corey Perry in game four.
Well, you have to have, though, the weight of your history, your resume, in order to speak up in those situations and know when it's time. Corey Perry is a quiet guy, except when he's on the ice. He's a guy that doesn't say a lot. When you get a chance to talk to him, he's very guarded, for lack of a better word. But Leon's right. With his resume, with his history, when he does speak, people are going to listen, like E.F. Hutton. The interesting thing about it, though, what Leon was saying there, you contrast that to game three and what we're going to play coming up, and how the game was still in reach in game three, third period, but it was only 4-1 before they started their antics, where they actually did quit on each other and the game. And they went after the Florida Panthers to exact some sort of physical revenge. And this time, a very nice counter, 180-degree turn of going, hey, we're in this. It's still, yeah, we're down three, but they didn't lose their minds. They stayed composed and they regrouped.
But you know what part of it is? They can't afford to lose their minds anymore. And that's because they would have been down 3-1 if they did. So there was nothing else to do but to go back to work.
Good point.
I mean, what are you going to do? And Corey Perry probably had a lot to do with that. But as Chris Knobloch, the head coach of the Edmonton Oilers, said after the game, it wasn't just Perry, but boy, did he credit that 40-year-old veteran.
I think all the guys pick their moments of talking. And, you know, we don't have a guy that is always the guy stepping up and talking. And everyone takes their turns, whether it's Leon or Ekholm or obviously Corey Perry. He carries a lot of weight with all the experience he has and his age. A lot of guys, everyone has a lot of respect for him. Coaching staff has a lot of respect for him. So when those guys do speak and say their thoughts, you know, everyone has a lot of respect for that. And it toes the line. Like, it's, what else can you do? Because of it, what he says is a lot of meaning.
Well, what else can you do? It's what Knobloch did to start the second period. He pulled out Stuart Skinner and he put in Calvin Pickard into the nets. And he talked about that decision in the contest at that time.
Yeah, it's unfortunate for Stu to be pulled there. Our team was flat. It was, you know, didn't give him any opportunities. And again, taking 3 penalties in the first period. 2 high stickings, which I'm hating. But, you know, unfortunate. We needed to change things up. And you know, the change was it was great the way he played. Picks, made some really big saves. You know, I don't think there was many shots in the second period, but there was a couple of really good quality ones that he came up big with. And then, as the game went on, obviously the one in the overtime, he got his glove on it just enough to keep that from going in. And, you know, it was great to see him make the saves when we needed him.
Boy, did he ever. He made some big ones early, too, and he said that that really gave him a lot of confidence stepping in that scenario.
Yeah, I think when I first got in there in the second period, we really started playing well, and there wasn't much action there for about 6 or 7 minutes, and I made that save. I don't know, it might have been Lundell on the little mini breakaway, and kind of gets you feeling, you know, better. You know, after that, it was pretty steady. They had some looks, but, you know, we had a ton of looks, too, and you know, our resolve was fantastic.
So let's make this clear. That was not Stuart Skinner's fault in the first period. In fact, Stu made a couple of big saves to keep it 3-0 when it could have gotten a lot worse. But boy, Pickard coming in, he's now 7-0 in the playoffs. What a great backup goaltender he's been.
Yeah, it's been a great story for the Edmonton Oilers. But you heard Chris Knobloch say in that first quote was the fact that his team was flat, so they needed to do something. And you have to do something in that situation. And so he pulls out Skinner. And they've been able to, you know, one of the big things about the Edmonton Oilers for years was no goaltending. They didn't have the right goalie, didn't have this great guy in the nets. Well, the tandem usually doesn't work when you're going back and forth between goaltenders in the playoffs. But it has worked because Pickard has been such a great story. Again, a guy that took a ton of criticism this year. But they have come through now to even this series.
So what happened to the Florida Panthers in the second period? Well, Matthew Tkachuk tried to put his finger on it after the game.
Yeah, we just probably sat back a little bit at the start. They got one early on the power play. And then, they kept coming. We probably got a little too stretched out and just, you know, weren't as connected, when fives are on the ice as we were in the first.
This kind of a series, you can get disconnected for a while. The key is limiting the amount of times that the other team is in control. That's a big thing in the regular season, too. You want to limit that time that the other team takes over. But Florida really struggled in the second period. And as he said, as Tkachuk said, it was all part of the power play that got things going for Edmonton. And it wasn't McDavid. It wasn't Draisaitl, at least scoring the goal. But they were on the ice, and they set up Ryan Nugent-Hopkins.
Draisaitl, right circle, cross-ice shot, and Nugent-Hopkins scores. And the Oilers are right back in this hockey game. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins puts it upstairs, and it's 3-1 on Nugent-Hopkins, sixth goal of the Stanley Cup playoffs, and his first point of any kind in this series.
Well, that was quite a snap by Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. Everybody forgets, Drew, he was first overall in the NHL draft. He's had a fantastic career.
He's had a very good career. Ryan's gone through, I want to say, 9 coaches in his NHL career with the Edmonton Oilers. He was a first-round draft choice out of Red Deer with the Rebels and a Sutter-owned and coached team. He is he's a guy who's just grown up as an Edmonton Oiler. But Jack Michael brought it up there, the play-by-play man for the Edmonton Oilers. That was Ryan's first point in this series. He had 0, and that was a big goal for them.
Sure was. It was on the power play. Draisaitl and McDavid assisted, as they usually do, as the nuclear option was definitely applied by Coach Chris Knobloch, and that got things going for the Oilers. And how about Darnell Nurse getting heard from here?
Off the faceoff, trying to plow through is Jeff Skinner to force that puck out against Kulikov. Briefly held in. Ekholm now will rifle a pass up to Frederick. Double team makes a play to Jeff Skinner. All alone was Adam Henrique, and Skinner with Kulikov getting right into his grill, denied the pass. Ekholm to Darnell Nurse. His shot deflected and poked into the corner. Now Kulikov is claiming his stick was held. Nothing called. Jeff Skinner forced it free for Ekholm. Nurse the drive, and he scores! Darnell Nurse cuts it to 3-2!
Nice finish for Darnell Nurse after a rough game the game before, and I know you're a big fan of his. I am, too. It was good to see that he got into that goal scoring.
I thought he had a heck of a game last night, and that was a beautiful shot. Short side, up top, over the shoulder. And when that goal went in, Danny, I just said to my lovely wife, I went, uh-oh, here they come. Watch out.
They have a shot at it now. The seesaw teeter-totter crazy nature of this series has got to be awfully tough for the teams to take emotionally. And head coach Paul Maurice was talking about that when he was discussing it post-game, because he says that it's as tough on the coaches as it is on the players.
Oh, it's as good as this thing gets. This is the Christmas. This is the payoff. Yeah, you want to be a good pro, but Tuesday and on the road and on the West Coast in November, not as much as fun as you think. But this is where you get the payback. Like, it's, don't get me wrong, it's not light. I mean, you feel it coming for about a day and a half. You can feel the game coming, and you feel it all day, and it's exciting. But this is truly the juice that you live for. And it happens for the bench. It's like twice as fast as it is for you people sitting upstairs, especially in this building. At ice level, the speed, the skill, the intensity of it is incredible.
Maurice also added that you just can't believe what you're seeing on the ice. And can he really appreciate that as a coach in the heat of the battle?
I think we focus on sometimes the mistakes that get made by good players at times, and you miss some of the heart and soul and the intensity of it. It's so fast. Every board battle, everything can turn into something. So there's a tension because both teams can score. I mean, from my point of view, there's been phenomenal goaltending in this series. The numbers tell me I'm lying, but the final score says I'm lying, but the goaltending has been incredible because the game can break on slot pass to Sam Bennett, crack a bar. I mean, those are the ones that there's just everything is dangerous all the time. So there's a mental intensity, mental toughness. I think both teams show that the game's not going to be over till it is. You get three of four games in a final into overtime. You've got two really good, evenly matched teams.
What's it like on the bench dealing with the back and forth, the seesaw nature of a great playoff series when you have to deal with the big picture too and try to stay calm?
If you've got a good team, they kind of take over, Danny. From a coaching point of view, head coach has got more to do. He's looking at matchups and things like that. Assistant coaches, you're trying to just make sure you help out as much as you can, talking to the guys, keeping the guys up. There's a lot of conversation going on, but the player has to instigate it. You don't want to get too much in their heads as the play is going on. I learned that from Ray Whitney in the Calgary series years ago. The interesting thing, and when you're listening to Paul Maurice there, how he is taking the 3-0 lead and the comeback by Edmonton, and just, it's out of the conversation. He's not down on his team about that. It's just out of the conversation. And so the narrative gets changed from the way that he's talking about it to his guys going, hey, you know, it's just a great, two really evenly matched teams, just a really great series is what we're looking for. This is Christmas. This is the great time. Look where we are. Look at the opportunity we have. He's looking at the next thing and not the past. I think that's fantastic coaching.
Well, and the players are reflecting that too. You think about Sergei Bobrovsky, for instance. He basically was saying how he thought that these games were exactly as you would expect. And maybe not, but Edmonton ends up tying the score. Vasily Podkolzin ties the game, the former Canuck, with about 4 minutes remaining in the second period. And then in the third, really late, with about 6.5 to go, a former Shark stepped up for the Oilers.
Another chance, and now on to Barkov. Poke checked away by Janmark. Open man, Kapanen. One-timer, score! Jake Walman! And Edmonton has its first lead of the game, 4-3!
I'd like to just comment on a couple of things. Number one, in those previous quotes from Paul Maurice, you notice that his voice is getting a lot scratchier because of all of the sound in the building. You got to yell louder on the bench. That's part of it. And how about Jack Michaels getting a little more excited than when the team was down 3-0?
Yeah, it's funny how the emotions just go up and down no matter who you are, no matter where you are and what your role is with a team. Jack lost his mind on that one. Heck of a shot by Jake. Really good play to strip the puck off of Barkov. And they showed Barkov after on the Canadian television. And he was very disappointed in himself. And we know Jake can shoot. He got all of that one.
By the way, Jake Walman was not fined $5,000 as we reported last show. He actually got fined $10,000 because of two incidents that happened. One was the water bottle squirting incident on the bench that kind of doused Brian Boucher between the benches when he was trying to get his glove back from A.J. Greer. But the other one was during that little scuffle on the bench, he kind of reached out and suckered somebody. And so he got another $5,000 on Tkachuk. So it was another $5,000 fine. So Jake's going to be the happiest guy down 10 grand if the Oilers come back and win the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, absolutely. It was Jake's played very well.
He has.
And it was a terrific shot. He's playing with a lot of energy. He had a couple of key blocks as well in that game. But that one was a big one for them, obviously.
Well, two more highlights to play for you. One, the game-tying goal by Sam Reinhart, one of the top goal scorers in hockey the last couple of years. This one was his sixth of the playoffs, and it couldn't come at a better time with only 20 seconds left.
Kulak up the far side. Verhaeghe stops it up. Bennett in close. Reinhart in front. Tkachuk. Reinhart shot, and he scores! And Sam Reinhart ties the game with 19.5 seconds to go. Here in the third, we are tied at four. Sam Reinhart comes through and ties the game.
Hey, nobody said it was going to be easy, but then it came into overtime. Some big saves on both sides, and then Leon got larger.
Bouchard at his own blue line, directs a pass over to Ekholm. Florida makes the long change, breaking free as Draisaitl to the net, score! Leon Draisaitl has tied the series with his fourth OT winner in the playoffs. Final score, Edmonton 5, Florida 4, in overtime.
And in the process, what does Leon Draisaitl do, Jack, with his fourth overtime goal in one playoffs? That, my friend,
is a new league record.
There you go.
New league record for Leon. And you know what? Maybe earlier in the playoffs, we were talking about Mikko Rantanen making a case for the Conn Smythe. I think Leon's name is getting larger.
Yeah, it is, without a doubt. By the way, great reference. Leon's getting larger. That was fantastic. When you look at that goal, though, Danny, I thought of the great Brett Hedekin and how much and how right he is despising defensemen who go down on two-on-ones. Mikkola, what he's doing going down to the ice, all he did was just fall to the ice and it goes off of him. Leon's trying to make the pass. It was a lucky goal, but luck is part of playing in the playoffs. It goes off of Mikkola's inside leg and outside leg and goes in the net. Stay on your feet, defenseman. Brett Hedekin, one of the smartest guys we've ever been around when it comes to the game of hockey. He used to talk about that all the time on the broadcast. It was a two-on-one. When you go down, it is 100%, almost 100% that you are going to cause a problem if you're a defenseman sliding and going down on a two-on-one.
What a tight series this is. Two games apiece heading back to Edmonton for the final Saturday of the NHL season. Saturday night will be game number 5. And Calvin Pickard, the most relieved guy in the entire building, talked about the big game ability of Leon Draisaitl and how enjoyable it is to see it.
Yeah, he's as clutch as it gets. Obviously, it was a game of bounces. They got one at the end of the third there, and then we got the last one. But you know, he's been playing great, always scores big goals at big times, and, you know, we're going home with momentum.
Drew, so now it's a best-of-three series. It's all even, and it starts in Edmonton. Give us your thoughts and handicap how the rest of it's going to go.
I go back to what Matthew Tkachuk said after giving up a three-goal lead. They were disconnected. When Florida is connected, when they're playing close together, when they're playing five men in the zone, they're very tough to beat. But for me, I look at this now as a best-of-three. The game that the Florida Panthers have to play against the Edmonton Oilers cannot ever let up. You've got to get back to that connected, hard, forechecking style, but you've also got to find a way, if you can, to limit Leon and Connor. Leon's been the man, without a doubt, for this team, doing what he's doing. But the Florida Panthers cannot change the way that they have played for the most part, going straight ahead, forechecking and keeping them in their zone. For the Edmonton Oilers, they're feeling pretty good about themselves and going home with two out of three chances to win the Stanley Cup. They're looking like the favorites to me right now.
They are, but Florida is a team that's got a lot of experience, and they've been through this before, and so obviously they're probably the most qualified team to deal with this sort of adversity. And once again, as we finish up the show, Yevgeny Nabokov's theories about momentum are being proved right by this series. There is no such thing. So we'll see how it all turns out on the Stanley Cup Playoff Report. See you next time.
You've been listening to the Stanley Cup Playoff Report. This has been a presentation of the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.